Thank you for joining me on this August the 4th, 2014, in the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, the United States of America, on God's good planet Earth. This is PJ, your internet pastor, the retired pastor, over 70 years old, but still doing what I'm supposed to do. You want to know what I'm supposed to do? Listen, I put a clip up from the text that I'm quoting from today. I put a clip up, and I took a portion. Let me go to my Facebook page, and so that I can do that. Let me pause this now. I was preparing this morning for the webcast, and I came across this wonderful reading here. And let me go to it right out of the text and read it to you. It's on page 135 for you brothers. As a matter of fact, for my brother in New York City that bought the book last week and has been following, thank you so much for that. He contacted me on Facebook, and I explained to him that I don't befriend everybody on Facebook, because my Facebook is my very private Facebook page. I don't like to put out everything out there, but I'll see how it goes with my new friend, Jonathan, as we continuously correspond. Listen to this. God has created me to do him some definite service. He has committed some work to me, which he has not committed to another. I have my mission. I may never realize it in this life, but I shall be told in the next. I am a link in a chain, a bond of connection between persons. He has not created me for nothing. I shall do good. I shall do his work. Therefore, I will trust him. Whatever, wherever, let me add this, whenever I am, I cannot be thrown away. This is from a writing by a gentleman named John Henry Newton. He was the founder of the Oxford Movement. Having been rejected by both the Anglican Church, from which he had come, and the Catholic Church, from which he was converting, wrote those words. And so you see, you find people leaving one denomination, going to another denomination, leaving one group, going to another group, trying to find their way, but not exactly being able to put your finger on it. Now let's come back to the chapter that we were dealing with, and I think that we were dealing with it pretty good. The phallic male Zakar, the mysterious taskmaster. I'm going to move on from that chapter, and I want to move into something else. I think you got the drift. But let me talk a little bit about the phallus and male fantasy. This is a very, very, very interesting portion, and I'd also like to take this time to introduce you. Listen, I want you to go to, well, you're already on my website if you're listening to this. As you came to the website, you see the official video Mechanism 48 Carry On. I want you to know that Dante is, as a matter of fact, he emailed me this morning. He's a personal friend of mine. He has sat here in the Lucy Coleman studio. I have one of his interviews with me. I'm going to have to look in the archive files and look up Dante Reed. But that's Dante Reed. And you know what? I got to tell you, when I first met Dante, he had done some work. And I said, Dante, it's good work that you've done. And it's really... But then I told him, look, tone down the swear words. Because, you know, this generation can't even communicate without using foul, filthy language. It seems like that's all they understand. Especially when they disagree with each other. They name call and everything like that. So what Dante did is he beautifully put this thing together. I not only want you to look at the video, it's a very well done video. He's a professional in his own right. But Dante refuses to compromise his art, who he is. And he has to get that message out to the young people. And if you find or have young people that like to listen to that kind of music, let them listen to that. It's a fine YouTube clip, and that's why I embedded it to my website. And you know, if I embed it to my website, I really have deep feelings for a person like that and for the message that he's trying to spread. Kudos to you, Dante. kudos to you, my brother. Keep on doing that. Now let's get into the book. If you're reading along with me, I'm on page 65 and I'm starting the Fellas and Male Fantasy. Warren Farrell is a controversial writer on men's issues, but the author, Robert Hicks, says, "I must admit, when I first encountered his explanation of men and women's primary fantasies, much fell into place for me." He says that men's primary fantasy is having access to as many beautiful women as desired without risk or rejection. Now, here's something that I got to share with you. I was told that I could go out and really have a good time on a date here recently. That's right, with a lady. And I went through all of the, called and introduced myself, sent a picture and all of that, and the lady was very happy to meet with me. And this wasn't for one of those calls, you know, the B call. It wasn't that, because I don't do that. If I want to do that, I surely wouldn't be telling you about it on this microphone. So it wasn't for that. It was just to meet a woman. I wanted to see if I could really meet a woman and really fall into that. Well, of course, I was rejected. And so that makes this webcast very practical for me. Now, you may say, "Well, you're 70 years old. What do you expect?" No. Don't be that way. Look at me being 70, and then look at a 70-year-old person that screwed their life up all their lives. There's a great difference. You know, I meet a lot of people, and they say, "You look good for 70. That's because I didn't dog myself when I was young. See, when you dog yourself, when you drink, when you smoke, when you stay in the street all night, when you eat the wrong kind of foods, when you don't take care of yourself, you don't exercise, when you don't have a healthy environment to be around, you look like a dog. You look like a dog, you smell like a dog, you stink like a dog, you act like a dog, you bark like a dog. You is a dog. Well, I don't look like a dog. I'm a pretty good looking old man. But can't find anybody that, because, well, this society, really, I really think that part in my life is dead and gone and over. That's why I'm glad that God gave me a task to do these webcasts. So these men want to have primary access to as many beautiful women that they can without rejection. Women's primary fantasy, contrary to much of the popular women's literature, it is that of security and family. See, a woman wants to be secure, and a woman wants to have somebody take care of her babies. That's what this thing is all about. When the most current world almanac was consulted in 1992, one finds that the best-selling magazine exclusively for men was Playboy, with a circulation of 3.4 million. So when you got 3.4 million guys ordering Playboy on a monthly basis, well, this small but very significant fact explains both the popularity of pornography and the addictive elements that are a part of it. And it's been my premise to say that if the wife of the husband disrobes and shows herself on a regular basis, let her stay in the gym, exercise right, eat the right kind of foods, you can keep that body looking beautiful. I've seen older women still hold it together. You don't have to have babies and fall apart. Oh, no. But then Hicks talks about the real power of pornography. He says the real power of pornography is that it provides men with the ultimate fantasy fulfillment without the risk of emotional rejection that often accompanies relationship with real women. Correct, because that's what happened to me. Well, if she won't go out with me, if she won't spend some time with me, well, I know what I have to do. I have to do it because I have to do what I have to do. I'm a man. A man is going to do what he has to do. Now, those of you that go to church and you got all this idea in your mind, well, you know, it's not going to be all right. Robert goes on and talks about our fragile male egos. I don't have a fragile male ego. It's just that when you approach a woman and you want to take her out for a bite to eat and have that going for you like that, and then consequently, she doesn't come at you like that. Well, then you want to ask the question, so what in the hell is going on? That's what you're asking. So pornography solves that problem. Here there exists a seemingly unceasingly supply of super attractive, inviting women, and now men, for some men, because we live in that kind of a world, always available, always willing, who will give the impression that each reader or the viewer of this is very special. So pornographic literature plays with our minds at the deepest level, and some men are hooked into it. I recall years ago I went through a tinge of that, and I found myself getting rid of all that stuff, and the next thing you know, I bought another whole new batch, just telling you like it is. So this is precisely what Solomon tried to warn his two sons about in the book of Proverbs. This idealized woman of the night preys on the young, okay, taking the initiative by inviting the naive to her couch, which is richly covered with colored linens and sprinkled with scented perfumes. She says, "Come, let us drink." That's what she says. "Let us drink our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with caresses." You can read that in Proverbs chapter 7, verse 18. She makes him feel special as he is the only one in her life. Look at Proverbs chapter 7, verses 6 through 23. I don't know whether you guys ever read that, but I'd love to read it to you. Let me turn to that. I have my book right here. Let's Proverbs 7 and start with verse 6. Yeah, I think that's good. I haven't done this in a while, and I want to take my time because I'm off for a whole month. I'm not going to work for a whole month. Don't have to go to work. I have time to work in this office and get a lot of work done prior to the semester starting on September the 1st. So I'm going to flood you with this stuff. And I want to thank you, Jonathan, for listening to me there in New York and encouraging me to continue to do what I'm doing. And those of you others, my brothers up in Canada, man, I'm telling you, I got guys listening to me from basically all over the country and in other countries. And I'm thankful to God for that because, you know, the locals aren't listening to me. They're not listening. They're not hearing it. And I'm telling you, if you hear this, your life will be progressive. You will move from one step to the next step to the next step to the next step. If not, you're going to keep having the hiccups, falling back into the same old traps that you set for yourself. Go to Proverbs chapter 7, and we're going to start at verse 6. It says, "For at the window of my house I looked out through my lattice, and I saw the young and naive." Ah, yes, these young men around me. "I discerned among the youths a young man lacking sense." So the Bible says that the young man is stupid if his eye is looking at booties and breasts. That's a stupid man that wastes his time doing that. Don't be listening to the rank sinners that tell you that there's something wrong with you if you're not a lust puppy. I have to guard myself against that mess. Look at verse 8. "Passing through the street near the corner, and he takes the way to her house." In other words, the young man is walking down the street, but he knows where Missy lives, so he wants to go home by passing by her house. Why? Look at verse 9. "In the twilight, in the evening, in the middle of the night, and in the darkness, and behold, a woman comes to meet him." In other words, while he's walking by the whore's place, she comes out to the street to meet him, dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart, because that's what the wench is doing. She's trying to seduce you. And you got males that'll seduce males and females. Same kind of thing. Trying to seduce you. She is boisterous and rebellious. How many women you know can talk louder than you and scream you down and argue you down? Look what else. "Her feet do not remain at home." No, she's in the streets, just like the average whore is in the street. And then it says, "She is now in the streets." That's verse 12. It tells you where she is. "Now in the squares." In other words, she's running. You know what? A fool was asking me, would I buy a ticket to a Beyonce Jay-Z concert? I hear those two idiots are in my city, Los Angeles, this weekend. And they were selling tickets for $250. Man, can you believe that? I'd pay $250 to see these two slop bags I wouldn't pay $25. Now, I'd like to go to the Hollywood Bowl and see this concert by, what's his name, the jazz pianist, but I just don't have the funds. My money is so messed up, I can't even go to the Hollywood Bowl and see, I forget his name. I won't, because I have no business thinking about it. I like to be entertained, too. I'm not going to fool you. I don't be sitting around the office, sitting in the house, reading the Bible all day. I don't do that. You go stark raving mad doing stuff like that. But I want to talk about the hole that tries to seduce us and gets us into lust probation. Look at this. She is now in the streets, in the square. She lurks by every corner. So she seizes him and kisses him. And you know I love to be kissed. And then it says, and with a brazen face, she says to him,
I was due to offer peace offerings today. I have paid my vows. Therefore, I have come out to meet you, to seek your presence earnestly. And I have found you. I have spread my couch with coverings, with colored linens of Egypt. I have sprinkled my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come now. Come, let us drink our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with caresses. For my man is not at home.
In other words, the hoe was married and asking you to come and lay down in another man's bed, and you are willing to do that. That's why a whole bunch of folk get a bullet right between their ears when they do stuff like that. She continues,
for the man is not at home. He is going on a long journey, for he has taken a bag of money with him, and the full moon he is due home.
See, in other words, a man is out making money, providing for her, building that house for her, and all that stuff, and she's inviting the horny toad in her bed. Now, you think you're getting away with it because don't nobody sees it. Let me tell you something, God sees it. I know we live in a day and age where God ain't real. I know we live in a day and age where, you know, John, you one of them old dudes that believe. No, I'm a man. I ain't no punk. I'm a man. I know God is real. When I was married, I ain't never messed with nobody's wife or husband. I didn't do no mess like that. That's crapola. That, hey, listen, retribution comes your way when you do that. Okay, you're not into retribution. You don't like the word. How about this one? Payback. You don't like payback. How about this one? Karma. Yeah, it's going to, hey, what goes around comes around. What goes up must come down. Trust me. Now, I can get back to Robert Hicks's book. Thank you, Solomon from the Grave. You spoke to me. So Solomon talks about that, doesn't he? Oh, wait a minute. Let me continue to read this. Let me give you something else. This is beautiful. Once you look at this, our phallus must be regulated according to God's word in order to be most glorifying to him and for us to have a satisfactory experience at this stop on the male journey. In other words, on the male journey, a satisfying experience is you pleasing God, not you pleasing yourself. Because pleasing yourself, you just want to make yourself happy. But that's just going to last a couple of hours. That's indefinite happiness. See, as a brother that believes in Jehovah God, Elohim, Yahweh, I am happy all the time. The only time that I get unhappy is when I'm completely bored and have absolutely nothing to do, or I think about my financial woes. I'm not thinking about no financial woes. I think I got a few dollars to get by, and hey, I get by with a little help from a friend. You understand what I'm saying? Because this is going to be a difficult 30 days, real rough. But hey, you come to my website every day. I promise you something. Every day for the whole month of August, I'm going to have a webcast or two up every day to fill your minds and hearts. I want you to listen. You go to work 5 days a week, right? You take the train. Those of you that live in Boston, you taking the train. Oh, where you live? Memphis? Oh, wait a minute. St. Louis. All right. Miami? Good. San Diego? You all right? Whichever way you get to work, plug this in your iPhone and listen to my webcast. Trust me, brothers, within 2 weeks, if you take my admonition, your whole life will change. You will be different. You will be better. And I'm not trying to tell you to put the pornography down. I'm not trying to tell you that because you're a man. Sometimes you want to see how a woman look. And I know the Bible says lust not in your heart and all that kind of stuff. Deal with that lust, because you will give a retribution, an answer for that lust. I try not to be a lustful person, but at times when I see a beautiful person, you know how it is. Will all the brothers in the church say amen? Amen, brother. But you know what I'm saying. Glorify God. Now, for a biblical portrait of the phallic man, we're going to look at Samson, because Samson is a good picture of the phallic man. You know, Samson in the Old Testament, when Robert speaks at men retreats, he says he always throws out to the men the question, what biblical character do you see as the phallic male? Almost without exception, some biblically illiterate man mentions Samson. All right. It seems fairly common knowledge among those who are honest with the text of their Bibles that Samson's fatal flaw was his phallus, if you will, or his penis. That was his fatal flaw, his penis. There's many a man paying child support for children that they fathered to some woman, and to man, they are paying child support for the rest of their lives. I know a man that'll never pay off his $35,000. I said, why aren't you working? He said, I'm not going to get a job, because if I get a job, they're just going to garnish my check. I said, who's going to garnish your check? Why would somebody take your check that you work for all week? Oh, man, I made this baby, and you know, I left the heifer, and so I'm not paying for it. And so I said, oh, so you're one of them delinquent daddies. You go around poking women and shooting sperm in them, making babies, and you don't take care of the baby? What kind of a dude are you? And I got some news for you. I got two grown babies. I never did that. Matter of fact, I got to tell you the truth. My money's real tight this month. I called one of my babies, and my baby just said, tell me how much do you need, and daddy, I'll send you whatever you need. That's what kind of children I raised. I didn't abandon my children. You see, when you're a phallic male, you abandon your children, you abandon your responsibilities, and then you try to call on God. God ain't hearing you. Not hearing anything like that. God only hears one kind of man. A man that will, wait, what's that thing that the sergeant told me when I was in the army? Please don't get offended at my language, people. Please don't. I'm trying to reach young men. I'm not trying to reach you churchgoers. But when I was in the army, you know what the sergeant said? When we spend too damn long time in the bunk, he says, get up. I don't want to see nothing but asses and elbows, because we had to scrub the floor of the barracks that we slept in every other morning with toothbrushes. You tell a man something like that now, he'll declare an unholy war on your behind. Men are weak. Men are the weakest elements in our society today, feminized to the hilt. That's why we can't get a dang thing done. What's matter with our young people? What you think is matter with them? What did you buy them when they were youngsters? Every time they wanted a new sound device, what did you do? You paid for it. You got it for him, didn't you? Just to keep him out of your hair. I was talking with a young man yesterday, and he was bemoaning the fact that he wanted something. I said, you can cry all you want to. I'm not giving you a dang thing. What's the matter with you? You out of your mind? The definitive word is no. All right? Learn how to use that word in your language. No. It's a beautiful. Just listen to the way it sounds. No. But you did it for them. You bought it for them. You flooded their minds with all that. You helped pollute them to the degree that they're in. And now they're thoroughly ruined by time and management over their minds and their lives. And now you want to take them to church and so that God can do a miracle. Stop it. Samson was one of the greatest judges in the history of Israel, and is even mentioned in the Hall of Faith passage in Hebrews 11, verse 32. So he had to be, since he's recorded in the New Testament as well as the Old Testament, a very popular character indeed. So the final biblical commentary on this man was favorable in spite of his glaring sexual exploits. Listen to me. Because a lot of you young men out there, and you know what? Young men, take it from PJ. When a woman refuses to go out on a date with you, be happy. Number one, you can save some money. Number two, you won't ever be deceived by somebody that says one thing but believes something else. So Samson was his example prima facie of the phallic male who never developed beyond the sexual level of manhood. That's what Samson's problem was. Now, when that sentence was written by Hicks, and I read it because I underlined it, and I have it underlined in my book, he never learned. He never developed beyond the sexual level of manhood. A quick overview of Samson's life reveals a miraculous birth and a sincere dedication to God and his parents. You can read that in Judges chapter 13 in the Old Testament, verses 1 through 5. He took a Nazarite vow, wherein he agreed never to have his hair cut or to eat or drink any fruit of the vine, whether it be wine or strong drink. Now, that's a vow that he took. It doesn't mean that wine or strong drink is not to be touched. If you don't want to touch wine or strong drink, don't. But you don't have a right telling that to anybody but a stark raving lunatic or an alcoholic. But the Bible records that he faithfully carried through on his vow his entire life. And the text also says that the Spirit of the Lord was upon Samson, just like the Spirit of the Lord will be upon many of us in our society today. I'm sure. I have no doubt of that at all. But Samson liked and fell in love with good-looking Philistine women. Samson was looking at the boobs and the butts. That's what he was looking at. Have you ever been with somebody in a... Man, I was somewhere. Oh, I was in a mall yesterday with two young men. And I'm in the mall, and these women kept passing by. And you see these men literally stopping in the middle and turning their heads. And I'm saying, what in the heck are you doing? I said, number one, that is offensive to do that. And only a whore would appreciate you. A decent woman might think that that is unseemly. And I neglected to tell them that if they did that and the woman's husband was there, he'd probably come and knock the crap out of them looking at his wife like that. But these people have no respect for anything or anybody these days. Ugh. All right. But Samson liked and fell in love with good-looking Philistine woman. Apparently, Samson hated what the Philistines stood for as the enemies of Israel, while at the same time, he was very much attracted to their women. In other words, I don't like you Philistines because you're enslaving my people, but you sure have got some jamming, packing, booty packing mamas here. That's what he was saying. So the first time that he gazed upon one of the daughters of the Philistines, he wanted her simply because she looked good to him. Now you see that in Judges 14 and 3. You can read it yourself. I'm not going to read it. You got a Bible? Look it up. Even though God used his marriage, okay, and she became an agent of his own deception. See, while covertly trying to find out the answer to Samson's riddle, because you see, he wasn't supposed to marry that Philistine woman, Delilah, you remember her. He wasn't supposed to marry and get involved in that. And so what does she do? Man, Samson's riddle for the sake of his own people. So his wife uses her feminine powers. She cries and says, in effect,
"You hate me and don't really love me, or you would tell me the answer to your riddle."
In Judges 14, 15 through 17, I would say, "I ain't telling you nothing. What's the matter with you? If I told you that, you'd do it and all my power would be gone." And I said, "Now come over here and let me look at that beautiful face of yours." I was looking at a beautiful face and not in my house either. And the beautiful face said to me, "Oh, you just want to get next to me." And I said, "Let me tell you something. You are the most beautiful creature that I have seen in a number of months. You are fine. You are born fine. No doubt about it." But I said, "No, I do not. I have those kinds of desires and ambitions for you." After 7 days of this, Samson gives in and he gets his hair cut. How soon do you give in? How many days does it take? 7 minutes. The Philistine wife is then given to one of his companions. Now, one would think that Samson would have learned his lesson about having his fellas determine his relation with women, but yet later he revisits his former wife and wants to have intercourse with her, but her father refuses him. See, he gets burned and he goes back because he is phallic driven. And that is what he is. So you see that? Give me a minute. All right, let me get back at it. I'm back here. I just had to break off and do something that's very important here. All right. Fell for the good-looking woman. Now, I'm moving on down, moving on down, moving on down, moving on down. And the Philistine wife is then given to one of his companions. But Samson still doesn't learn his lesson. She is even more beautiful than him in Judges 15, 1 and 2. In an angry response, Samson destroys the Philistines' crops. You see what happens when you can't get your wussy or something else that you need to make your life work. You start doing things like that. He destroys his crops and he goes back to his own people to recoup. After a time, look what he does again. He returns to Philistine territory, which is Gaza right now. Because you know where all that fighting is going on over there in Israel and Gaza? That's Gaza. Okay. And he sees a prostitute and he has intercourse with her. See the phallic problem? Because he didn't learn his lesson. This provides another occasion for the Philistine to design an attempt to kill Samson. Twice burned, he would have learned, but he didn't. And that is the particular case that we have in front of us. Because a lot of people never learn their specific lessons. Now, the next event in Samson's life is his passionate affair with the Philistine, Delilah. From day one, he loves her. Now, I said Delilah earlier, but it was another woman. See, because he went through a lot of women. That's where men are in this society today. They go through a lot of women. Well, it is, and men, because the gay population is just as guilty of this stuff. We live in a sex-driven country, and we think that everything has to be keynoted and, I guess, put an explanation point on it with sex. And sex doesn't work. So from day one, he loves her. But also from day one, her allegiance is obviously more towards finding out the secret of Samson's great strength than really loving him. And this is what women do. Women have an option that they're looking for. They're trying to find out something about you. They're trying to find out something about you and what makes that work about you. Now, so we understand Samson. Let me go to page 68. I'm skipping over now because I'm trying to clear this up. I'm looking at, I'm 33 minutes into this. Samson is a high testosterone, manly kind of man. He is a Zakar to the core. But apparently he never grew beyond the phallic stage. That's where a lot of men are. So some of you young men, you want to check yourselves, because if you're in that stage, and that stage is going to leave you into a moral complexity, and then you have to do something about that moral complexity. Now, even though the Spirit of the Lord was upon his life, when it came to controlling his fellas, he fell miserably. He was hopelessly controlled by his fellas, thus giving in to his primary fantasy. What is his primary fantasy? Beautiful women. You know, whenever I see myself leaning that way or going that way, I say, come on, John, you don't want to give in to that. Because if you start giving in to that, you'll never recover. As men, the phallus defines our identity. Our lives often become oriented around it. Who we hang with, what we talk about, where we go, what we want to see when we go to a movie, and all that kind of stuff. The sexual power that women have over men is often underestimated. No, it's not by me. I know the sexual power they have. yeah. I understand, and I guess, you know, when you get to be at a certain age, nothing frustrates you anymore because you know where that's leading to. Rarely analyzed or talked about amongst men, yet daily men sacrifice their careers, their reputation, and marriages for the phallic pleasure that women can give. That's why a man would sneak out and be with a woman and his wife would figure him out and figure out that he's doing that. And then when the wife figures that out, well, there it is. So the pleasure is far more than sexual. It involves the affirmative acceptance and praise that the phallic male so desperately needs. And this is something because when you come into recognition that you need that. Now, for those of you ladies listening to me out there that have men, and you think that your man is playing around and everything like that, well, I'm going to give you to ask him. If he's a real man, he'll tell you. He said, I ain't playing around. I'm seeing somebody else. You can cut me off. You know, he'll tell you if he's a man. There's no problem with that. I know that there's a lot in the balance that you can lose and everything, but I ask you this question with all sincerity and everything. Why would you ever be with someone that you have no pleasure being with? That doesn't make any sense. See, now let's move on down. Move on down. Other women would like to see men more androgynous and lose some of the phallic impulse. Some have seriously mentioned castration as a cure. Now, that's crazy, but I know of an incident, which I won't get into right now, where that was very plausible, and I believe it took place, and I'm kind of ashamed by it. But that, castration for that violent impulse in men? No. You just have to come in contact with who you are. See, do you know what cruising is? Cruising is when your phallic is really out of whack and you get in your car and whatever city you live in, you go down to the place and you're going up and down the street because you're looking for something that you can be with. See, that's a phallic out of control. Verbal castration takes place daily with large doses of male bashing heard on the afternoon and evening talk shows. Now, women are making more money. They are more inclined to business. They do that very well. And so they have the leadership in our communities and in our environments. You know, they're talking about Hillary could be the next president and who's going to run against Hillary and all that kind of stuff. But the heart of our sexual violence lies with the phallus and men's perverted focus upon it, so that the phallus must be cut off, they say. I am equally concerned about the sexual crimes committed by men, but I don't believe that minimizing or degrading the phallus, well, really the word is denigrating the phallic is the answer. It isn't. To be male is to be phallic, so you don't cut it off. You don't do that. By creation, we are either male or female, so cutting it off is not going to solve the problem. You know, you got to get control of the problem right now. Stop listening to your peers. Stop listening to people that's going to flood your mind. Earl Wilson, a clinical psychologist, has given some excellent advice about bringing some sexual sanity to the phallic. He writes and he says, sanity returns when three things happen. One, we control our sexual behavior rather than being controlled by it. Now, this is a good thing. That means you have to have a very strong mind. And if you go to Jehovah, if you go to God and say, Lord, give me a strong mind. Remember what King Solomon did? King Solomon asked for wisdom, okay, to control our sexual behavior. All right. Number two, we use sex for its intended purposes, pleasure and procreation, rather than to meet our psychological needs. You see, because sex is supposed to be pleasurable. It would be ridiculous to think that, let's say that you're married to the woman and you practice. I'm sorry, that's a street sweeper going by. And he raced down the street. I hope he didn't leave half the trash in front of my house. Oh, well. There should be pleasure in sex. there should be pleasure that you have with your sexual partner. And it's also for procreation. It's a, you know, if you want children, if you want to expand the family. Number three, we keep sex in its proper perspective and don't take it too seriously. That's right. Because some men put the whole thing on sex. They get married for sex. Ladies, you got to know that. If the guy married you for sex, what are you marrying him for? Don't marry him for sex. There's a certain type of insanity with using sex for other than its intended purposes. I strongly believe that sexual sanity comes when sex is engaged in by a man and a woman who are married and deeply committed to each other. And that's the way it ought to be. But then, you know, people tell me all the time, John, marriages aren't like that now. It's not like that. You can't find couples like that. You can't pin people down to that. You can't make people see that. People who engage in sex apart from these constraints run the risk of becoming enslaved to their sexuality and thus having it lose its meaning. And so you can't do that. You can't become enslaved to that. This is a waste. And he says what? It approaches insanity. Wow. All right. And then he ends up in the last paragraph of this chapter 3, and it says, we never outgrow our phallus. It stays with us all of our lives, even though its power may wane. Now, let me talk about that waning power, because when you get older, it does. The power does wane. And sometimes now you can go to the store and the drugstore, and you can get these drugs, especially for married men, and a lot of young men try to get into this stuff. You know, I'm talking about Viagra and all this kind of stuff, and so you can have a more healthier sexual response. I understand that fully. I understand that completely. The story is told of one renowned seminary professor in his 70s. Walking down a city street with a young student. As an attractive, perfumed, and well-groomed lady passed by the two men, the seminary student took the characteristic masculine double take, then realizing that his esteemed professor did not even bat an eye or acknowledge that she was there, the student asked, sir, do you finally reach a point in your Christian life when you no longer are enticed or have problems with lust? The wise senior professor smiled and answered, my boy, the flesh never gets better. It just gets deader. So it is with the phallus. That's right. Good answer. But I would have said, son, you got to do what you got to do. I don't do that anymore because it leads nowhere. Thank you for letting me. Man, I ended up 2 webcasts with this, and that speaks volumes. That speaks volumes. Next time I'm going to start, I believe, on chapter 4, The Warrior, the Gibbor, the Glorious Hero. One Carl von Clausewitz on war, he says, we are not interested in generals who win victories without bloodshed. Sooner or later, someone will come along with a sharp sword and hack off our arms. All right. See, a man is not just concerned about being the victor, but he wants to leave somebody bleeding after the battle. You're dealing with a man. That's why when you see these videos of these boys fighting each other, and, you know, these boys, you know, men are very combative. They want to, you know, the only rights that a man really has, and I want to say this and then I'll end up this webcast this way, and I think it's a good way to end it. The only right that a man really has is when he owns something. Listen to what I'm saying. Because if a man doesn't own anything, he doesn't have a right to anything. He can't say anything. He can't procure anything. If he's a man and he hasn't discovered the way to wager an opinion. A man can't even wager an opinion unless he has something behind him to wager that opinion up. Let me give you an example. You're going out and you're looking for a job, right? You're a young man. You're going out looking for a job and you think you're a pretty good cook. You're a pretty good cook. And you want to work at an exclusive restaurant. You like the uniform. You go and you've pumped your resume. You set it up. Go there and the man looks at that and say, well, tell me where you've worked. Well, see, I've just worked in my own kitchen and everything, and I cook all these. And the guy's going to say, well, thank you very much. Now, why are your jaws getting tight? You're cooking for you. You're not cooking for nobody else. You may love your cooking. I remember once Morio made a dish. He thought that dish was delicious. All the people in the house ate it. Two or three people stopped and said, man, this is some nasty stuff. What did you do? I asked Morio about it. I said, why did you take offense? When they told you the truth. You don't know anything about cooking, preparing meals to eat, and the kind of people that eat the good food and stuff like that. No. Oh my, somebody's gonna get a ticket. Traffic officer. Oh my good. My neighbor's going to get a ticket. No, I'm not going to get up and go next door. I'm not going to stop the traffic officer from writing the ticket. The street sweeper went by, had to go around. You should be wise enough to know you cannot park on my street on street sweeping day. He is writing him, I think, that ticket. How much is that ticket? $85? Oh, my gosh. And these people are struggling trying to pay the rent in that house. But it's not my duty because a man drives that car, a grown man. You own the street. You live on the street. You park it under the sign. See, I want to see some blood. And the blood is when he has to pay for that ticket. And I bet you he will abide by city law and never. And it would have been a feminized move for me to say, wait, don't ride him. I'll get him to move the car. It's too late. The sweeper had to go around the car. He pays it to the piper. Don't you get it? Join me next time when we continue. And again, to my young friend from New York, I want to thank you for contacting me. Tell all your other friends about this marvelous book. As I read through this, I'm going to put not my insights, but just kind of like give a definitive clause on what I'm aiming at as I talk about that. I want to define it in that way, because if I don't give a definitive clause, you can get the book and read it, but you need a teacher to talk you through it. This is PJ here in Los Angeles, talking to many of you in various other places all over the world. I would love to hear from you. My email box is empty. Into the Word. INTOTHEWORD and the number 1 at AOL.com. Let me know what you think about these webcasts. Let me know if you think that I'm completely stark raving mad out of my mind, that I'm telling you something that would never work in this day and age. And just let me know. And another reason I didn't stop the traffic officer, because I used to do that. I worked for the same organization. And it would have been foolhardy for me to stop a brother from doing what I did. Thank you, my brother. That was a quick ticket, and he got away safe. Only on PJ Street. Hey, till I meet with you again tomorrow, you guys have a nice day out there, and stay awake on that train on the way and back home from work. God bless. Stay in the Word.